few months ago, I was down visiting a friend, and we decided to check out the new original Netflix series, Anne with an E, a new take on the Anne of Green Gables stories. Now, it's been years since I've either read the books or saw the old movies or shows. While I thought it started out pretty good depicting Anne, I couldn't think, I don't remember this part, or this is a bit different. Yet there's this one scene that even if they did change it, I couldn't help but think how great it was. Anne was just picked up from the train station by Matthew Cuthbert to bring her to her adopted home. They get into the carriage and Anne is just amazed by it all. And typical, she can't stop gabbing. She's commenting on the beauty of the trees, the glorious views along the coast, the majesty of the fields. The excitement she expresses to be in this new place, this new land, with this new family is just simply joyous. She can't contain it. Not at all. So she goes on and on for what they depict as hours on the ride home, about how wonderful this land is and the hopes of her new life with the Cuthberts. Spoiler alert, Matthew and his sister Marilla wanted a boy to help work on the farm. So the story goes downhill a bit before picking back up, but Anne doesn't give up on this hope for this beautiful land, this new life that she has hoped for so long, where she finds so much excitement, where she is so incredibly grateful. This seems to be quite the opposite of the Israelites in the wilderness. By now, they've been traveling for quite a bit, and they've grumbled a lot about wandering, about being hungry and thirsty, about not being settled. They've complained a number of times of how they never should have left Egypt in the first place. And yet God has still provided along the way each time they've grumbled and complained. They've made a covenant with God to be God's people, that God will be their one and only God. They've received the Ten Commandments by the word of the Lord. And yet when Moses hikes back up the mountain, they become impatient. They complain he's taking too long. What has become of this man who brought them out of Egypt? So quickly they forget their God. They demand an idol or other gods. And Aaron, Moses' own brother, one called by God to help Moses, Aaron, the line of the priestly nation of Israel, he says, okay, give me your gold. And he throws it into the fire, and bada bang, bada boom, out comes a golden calf. At least that's how Aaron explains it to Moses a bit later. And he goes on to tell them, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, echoing the very words of God when given the Ten Commandments, the covenant to these people. And the next day, after this calf was made, they had a festival. They made sacrifices and burnt offerings, ate and drank, and rose up to play, to revel, to laugh, to mock. In a sense, joyous of finally getting their way, feeling entitled that this is how it should have been all along, this self-indulgence, what they think they deserve, or at least think they should be able to get, securing one's own existence along with their wildest desires. A trap that we, from time to time, all fall into as well. This desire for self-indulgence, this concept or notion that we deserve something, that we are entitled to something, that we are of more worth than someone else, or that we know better or are better than someone else. Since the beginning, we've struggled with this. Adam and Eve thinking they deserve to eat from the knowledge of the tree of good and evil. Cain thinking he deserves the blessing just as much, if not more so, than his brother Abel, that he was entitled to it. And it's still prevalent today. How many times have we heard someone talk about the homeless just needing to get jobs? things we take for granted aren't necessarily as easy for others. When one is homeless, they're lucky if they have a suit or a clean outfit to wear to an interview. A way to get to the place of employment regularly, or let alone to even get to the interview. Usually they have no address, and it's hard to get a job without an address. And even if you do, even harder to get a paycheck. Many don't have a phone. How is one supposed to contact you if you can't be reached? And those who we judge that are homeless to get jobs also sometimes happen to be our veterans. Those on the streets after they come home from service, some suffering from PTSD and turn to substance abuse as a way to try and cope, find themselves living on the streets. And sometimes, though, many judge those that they see panhandling. The homeless looking for a hot meal or a warm blanket without even knowing what their reality is. If they served overseas, if they were a young teenager whose parents kicked them out of the house for being gay or transgender, whatever their struggles might be. From time to time, we all view things with a sense of entitlement, or at least a lack of always understanding someone's struggles that don't always match ours, whose reality is different than ours. And sometimes we also just don't really want to understand. Sometimes we'd rather hide our heads in the sand, even when the cries of those struggles of others are louder than we can turn up the volume on our headphones or our car stereos to drown out. Which is perhaps what happened when Hans Fien, a conservative Lutheran pastor, commented on the Baptist church shooting last Sunday in Sutherland Springs, stating that God answered their prayers, argued they prayed one day to be united with God. While as Christians this is something we all hope for one day, to be united in glory with our great Lord, I doubt most, if any, pray to go in such a hard way with loved ones, family, and friends watching, to have PTSD for years after such trauma. What about the ones who survived, those still alive? Did God not answer their prayer? Should they all have prayed harder? No, in his entitlement and his protecting his own theology and thoughts, his own reality, he forgot even Jesus wept at the tomb of Lazarus, even when knowing he'd be raising him just a few moments later. His word showed his entitlement rather than God's love, God's grace poured out. When we get stuck in our own realities, not realizing those of the larger world, the entitlement we have warps our view, our perception of others around us. Our own self-indulgences and desires for ourselves make us blind to the reality of others. Sadly, the Israelites didn't learn from this experience in the desert. In fact, it was one they were bound to repeat over and over again, killing prophet after prophet who tried to call them back to God, tried to get them to hear the cries of injustice, to look beyond their own entitlement, what they thought they deserved. For many throughout the Old Testament believed that those who were suffering just got what they deserved. They must have sinned in some way, turned away from God, and were now being punished. Yet prophet after prophet called them to look in the mirror at their own sins, their own failings. Called them to hear the cries of injustice, the cries of the poor and oppressed, the cries of the people God called them to care for, and they instead walked all over, used and abused. This call that was so very dangerous, many prophets did lose their lives in speaking these truths, for just trying to welcome people back to God. To welcome them to see God's incredible grace that had been poured out upon them over and over again. And this is exactly what Jesus is pointing to in his parable in Matthew. The king sent out slaves, his servants, to invite others to the wedding banquet. this huge, beautiful, grand celebration. This would have been one of the biggest, if not biggest, events, social events of the year, if not the century. Weddings in Jesus' day were of great significance, where a family's honor was put on display for days. Days of feasting and friends and fun. And a king would have such lavish food, decor, and wine with no restraints on spending. But those who were invited, not only ahead of time with so much notice to prepare, but also multiple times, refused this invitation. They didn't care. They made light of it. One returned to his farm, another to his business. Others seized the slaves, mistreated them, beat them, and killed them. Perhaps tired and annoyed of the repeated invitations. So instead, the king sends out other slaves and servants to invite everyone they can find to fill the banquet. They went out and did just that, finding both good and bad and bringing them into the banquet as wedding guests, cramming everyone in that they could find. A rather lavish picture that we sometimes just skip right over to get the part of judgment at the end. But perhaps this right here is the important part, just how very lavish it is that we shouldn't just skip over it. We're told the good and the bad, everyone these servants could find, are crammed into the wedding banquet. Those who may have never been invited to such event, those who just dropped everything at the last minute when they were invited and went to the party, those who many probably thought didn't deserve to be invited, this sense of entitlement. Jesus pokes at a bit in this parable as he is teaching those who listen the proper response to radical, gracious invitation. We are to come running, thrilled, excited, remembering that none of us are worthy of such an invitation. Not judging those around us, not feeling entitled over others, for it's not our position to judge who's with us at the party. We are just to come running into God's grace. Throw on the wedding robes and party all night, never questioning who is partying beside us, just enjoying that we ourselves had been welcomed, that we have been called to come, that we were handed this robe to be put on and follow after Christ. Welcome into the grace of God, the grace of God that none deserve, but if we choose to follow, to answer the call, to put on the robe, we are chosen to enter such a lavish blessing. Perhaps like Anne of Green Gables, when picked up from the train, we are to be so ecstatic that we can't keep quiet. We can't sit still. We express our gratitude and thanks in such public, joyous, and grateful expressions so others can come to share in it as well. Perhaps also like Leslie's story. She was 12 years old when her parents divorced, and when her dad left, they were in a real financial bind. Just before he left, as a last-ditch effort to try and save the marriage, they started going to church regularly, something they'd never done before. They weren't involved very much in the church by the time her dad left, so it's really unknown how much the church knew about their story, especially their financial struggles. But one night, their pastor came over out of the blue, unplanned and out of the way, as they lived on the opposite end of town. He came to deliver an envelope of money. It wasn't clear if it was a love offering or if it was a special needs type fund, but they were gifted with much needed support by this congregation that barely knew this family at all. From that point on, they were all in. While they couldn't always give financially at first, they became so extremely active, to the point that Leslie became the youth group director and eventually went to seminary and eventually became a minister. They recognize God's abundant grace and they never turn back. With excitement and joy, they made this known through serving their church and their larger community, through giving back whatever they could, their time, their money, their talents, their gifts, through letting go of entitlement and giving back the abundant blessing they had received, recognizing they were given more than they ever deserved, sharing God's abundant gift of grace with such extreme gratitude. May we all come to do the same, recognizing the gracious invitation to put on the wedding robe and follow after Christ, sharing the abundant grace and blessings God so freely gives, pours out over and over upon us again. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, may this be so. Amen.